Men outlived the dinosaurs. And vinyl outlived the iPod. Chew on that while we flip on over to the B-side. This is Vinyl Community Podcasts.
What's going on, buddies? Hey, it's Concert Buddy. Back with another episode here on Vinyl Community Podcasts. I haven't really figured out what to call these. These are going to be just kind of like mini-sodes, if you will, where there's something in the landscape of the record collecting hobby that kind of catches my attention and something I want to talk about, and it's kind of throwing it out there in the form of just a mini episode here on the podcast feed. So I've gotten some kind of solid responses to some previous versions of this I've done, so sit back, relax. Could be cringe, could be awesome. We'll see how it goes. But today's topic is vinyl subscription services. And this was inspired by the recent news that one of these subscription services, a company called Bandbox, had filed for, I guess, bankruptcy protection, going out of business, etc. And myself, like a lot of folks, unfortunately, had some pre-orders in with these guys, and doesn't look like we're getting our money, so we'll kind of get into that. But it got me thinking about the subscription service landscape at large, and I'm going to kind of talk about some of the players out there and my thoughts on them, as well as some kind of direct competition to these smaller businesses and not so smaller businesses. Like I said, we'll get into that, because some of the labels are kind of heading down this path of curation and subscription, and we'll kind of get into it. But let's kind of start there. So Bandbox was a subscription service that kind of focused primarily on independent or smaller label releases. And they did color variants. They would include like a little zine, a magazine about the artist. And they would ship you, you know, record of the month, whatever you order from their store, all that kind of stuff. And there have been a couple different times I kind of popped in and out of being an active subscriber. I got titles from Jimmy Eat World, Gaslight Anthem. I know I got a Vanilla Sky, that Tom Cruise movie. I got a exclusive colorway from them. And each time they came with this magazine, it was maybe a 4-page color-printed magazine, which is kind of different. I even got a Charles Bradley, who's one of my favorite soul singers of all time. Rest in peace, Charles. I got an exclusive color variant through them of his last album, Changes. But anyway, I thought it was a decent business model. They'd even came out with some Presidents of the United States stuff here at the end that had never seen vinyl before, some J.J. Gray and Mofro. So things that, you know, were kind of off the beaten path, which seems to be a common theme in some of these subscription services. And like I said, we'll kind of delve into that. But kind of a bummer because, you know, I think anytime, it's kind of like Star Wars, anytime we lose one of these planets in the galaxy that offer an alternative or offer something different to different collectors, anytime we lose one of those, I think it's kind of a drag. Now, I'm a little butthurt that my pre-order money is going up in smoke. I guess I'll have to take that up with my credit card company, because like a lot of companies, you know, the pressing plants and the lead time and getting these records made has gotten better coming out of COVID the last couple of years. But a lot of these smaller subscription services are, let's say, cash volatile in that they do take a lot of these pre-orders to have the working capital to then be able to go to the pressing plants and execute their purchase orders and all that kind of stuff. So I'm fully cognizant of how that kind of works, but it does kind of suck that you order something months in advance and then you kind of leave yourself open as a consumer. You kind of leave yourself open to situations like this that you can possibly not get what you paid for. So Bandbox, RIP. It's a shame, but it kind of inspired me to kind of talk about some of the landscape of how this business model works. And essentially, if you don't know, it's you like records, you want to buy records, you find one of these subscription folks, and each model, each company seems to have kind of like their own niche. Several of them are kind of in a crowded space and I'll kind of get into that. But I got to talk probably about the tip of the spear, the leader in the space, and that would have to be Vinyl Me Please. Vinyl Me Please has been out there since 2013 when it was started by Matt Fiedler and Tyler Barstow. And they started it in a lot of the same spirit that a lot of these other smaller subscription services have kind of come about. I did think it was interesting that I was doing a little research on this. And, you know, Vinyl Me Please has like this big kind of mission statement and, you know, about their great storytellers and this, that, or the other. And, you know, hey, if they really feel that way, more power to them. But at the end of the day, a business's primary motive is to make money, and let's not get lost sight on that. But I think when the guys started it back in 2013, it was probably like a lot of things, even like, hell, like Vinyl Community Podcast here. It's something that they felt would serve a need. And it usually starts with somebody or some people who enjoy that particular subject matter. And it sounded like, from everything I've read or learned over the years about Matt and Tyler, that, you know, they wanted to have records made that they couldn't get anywhere else. So I think from that perspective, I can completely appreciate the business model and what motivated them to kind of stand up this subscription-based business. Now, I've been a member off and on since, I think, 2016. So I've seen different things and different changes in their business model during that time, and I'll talk about that here shortly. But back when Vinyl Me Please first started, when it kind of came across my radar as a record collector, they were, like a lot of these subscription services, it was easier for them to bring to market or bring to their subscriber base independent or smaller label albums, artists, etc. And that's, I mean, obviously that has a lot to do with the licensing, right? Like, I think it's a lot easier for these subscription-based services to make deals on the cheap or on the cheaper with labels or smaller labels or indie artists directly, to where they can actually keep their costs and their overhead down. Totally appreciate that. And Vinyl Me Please, that's how they started. They had a lot of albums that I, frankly, had never heard of. That's why I didn't really jump into it until, like I said, 2016. Once they started building relationships with the labels, and once they started putting out titles, let's call it more mainstream. Like, I remember there was a Fugees reissue they did with a color variant. They did a Weezer, I believe, Pinkerton, if I'm not mistaken. So once they started dipping their toes a little bit more in contemporary bands, that's when it kind of became a little bit more of a reality of, hey, I'll try this out. One common theme of these subscription services is that they give you the option of flexibility. And Vinyl Me Please, I guess, kind of, again, being the tip of the spear in this market, kind of developed that business model of their own. I mean, they started, I think, offering, you know, the customary 3-month membership, 6-month membership, 12-month membership. Then that graduated to people who wanted to, like me, dip their toes in that bathwater and not be fully in and commit. They offered single-month memberships, which I think was a very smart thing. Great idea. That way somebody who is new to the service could kind of figure out if it was for them or whatnot. And especially those early days of Vinyl Me Please, there wasn't as many options. I mean, they literally had a record of the month. It was this, and if you didn't want it, then you could roll your credits over or you could swap it. That was a very smart idea. They had a store of past titles. Then also they started growing that to getting some distribution from some of the labels, and I think that's how they built those relationships with the labels, as they were stocking in-line, in-stock products through the store that you could swap out if you didn't like. For example, they had a title from a band called Wells Fargo that I picked up, but I know a lot of people are like, who the hell is Wells Fargo? And if you're not into the storytelling, air quotes, that Vinyl Me Please presents, you can opt out of that and get something else. If you get something that was something you would have liked months ago but weren't a member, that's the time to pop in. So I can appreciate the flexibility that their business model kind of pioneered in this space. And it's only extended now. You're talking over 10 years in business. They're getting their own pressing plant online out in Denver. A lot of big things going on with the company and the brand. And one thing that I think is kind of enviable about what they do is they've grown and they've expanded. It's no longer just a one title monthly curation service. They've got what they call these tracks, where they've established lanes They have an essential track, which is something that their curation team feels is something is essential to a record collector's collection. And I think that's smart. You know, they had the Fleetwood Mac record here recently, color variant, of course. That's kind of like one of their hallmarks is color variants. And we'll get into that, how these subscription services kind of use some of that to their advantage. But Vinyl Me Please has the Essentials track. They have a hip-hop track, country track, classics track. And then their latest foray into this diversification is the rock track. So I think, you know, again, I think a lot of that stuff is really smart. It gives a lot of diversity and it gives people options. And options is, as a record collector, it's very helpful because, you know, there's only so many finite dollars in our respective budgets and you want to spend those judiciously and you want to get great return on what you're trying to bring into your collection and what you want to listen to. Now, Vinyl Me Please, since I've been a member, like I said, off and on since 2016, I mean, they've had some bumps in the road from the mailers they use, and I'm not going to go into that soapbox. I mean, that is probably my biggest bugaboo with their business model, even today, is the mailers have gotten better, but still are not best in class. But, you know, a couple years ago, they got a lot of steam online from their own subscriber base, and then obviously the message boards, the Hoffman forums, and what have you, Vinyl Collectives. Anybody go to Vinyl Collectives message board anymore? I certainly don't. But they got a lot of flack because they took their prices up, and they were one of the first of the subscriber or subscription-based businesses to push that $40 per title price point. And at the time, there's a lot of people not happy about that. I think the market has kind of caught up to that price point, so it's not as, let's call it, ridiculous, for lack of a better word, as it was at that time. But I mean, reading the boards and reading the forums, I'm leaving, I'm out of here. Screw you! Vinyl Me Please. You would act like, you know, they literally ran over your dog in the driveway kind of thing. It's unreal. But that's the that's a society we live in now. But I could appreciate that and turn me off too at first. Like $40 for a single title, like you have to be kidding me. But as the market's kind of caught up to that, and I think between you, me, and the lamppost, I think probably part of that cost increase was to build up a little working capital for this pressing plant, which they've ambitiously got off the ground, and I wish them well on that because I think the more pressing plants out there, the better. But now they've kind of settled into the 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, 12 month. And with anything else, if you buy a longer-term subscription plan, then it's a little bit cheaper. So like a three-month subscription right now at Vinyl Me Please will run you about $128. So that on a per-unit basis, I'm going to do the math, bebop, boobop, that's my calculator, it's about $43 a title. 6 months comes out to $237. So now you're getting a little cheaper. It's $39.50 a title. And then if you really pony up, if you do the damn thing and buy a full one-year membership in advance, it's $435, which comes out to about $36.25 per title. So if you can afford it and buy up, go for it. I actually am just coming off of a one-year membership myself. It's the longest term I had ever had with Vinyl Me Please, and that was inspired in part by a promotion they ran where they were, quote-unquote, air quotes, giving away free records. And the longer your term, they gave you some records to choose from a rolling or a running list of, if you did a 3 month, I think you got a free record. If you got 6 month, I think you got three free records. And if you did a 12 month, I believe I got eight free records. And again, I'm using free in air quotes because you did pay for it one way or another. Let's not get lost in the sauce there. But that enticed me and several other friends of mine in the community to pony up and do the 1 year. And in hindsight, you know, it was a nice promotion, it was a nice way to entice myself and others to commit to the longer term subscription and membership. But I got to be honest, those eight free records were decent titles, but there were things that I had passed on in the past, things that didn't grab me, if you will, when they were first announced. And so those things, did I really need to add them to my collection? I guess the jury's still out on that. If you had a couple drinks in me, I'd probably admit that I probably didn't need those records. But when you do it a per piece analysis and you throw in 12 plus another 8 to that $400 a year charge, it made it like $20-something a record, and then that's easier to stomach. So I think if you're doing some kind of mathematical jujitsu, you kind of could start to break down some of their costs, at least in cost of goods sold and that sort of thing. But we're not doing a full forensic on Vinyl Me Please. But to put a cap on it, I mean, Vinyl Me Please is the leader in this subscription model space, and they've done some really great things. I think they've kind of set the tone and set the expectation for the marketplace on what a subscription service should be. I know they've kind of, you know, they've had different little cutesy things they've kind of had over the years. I know when I first started subscribing to Vinyl Me Please, they would include a 12x12 printed sheet that it would have custom artwork for that particular title of the month inspired by that release. Like, for example, The Gorilla's Demon Days was one title that had like this custom artwork. And then on the back of it, they'd include like a drink recipe, like a mixed drink recipe, with the thought of it being this sophisticated, suave kind of thing that, hey, you're a member of the club, and when you're listening to Demon Days, make this drink and sit back in your Eames chair and you're cooler than cool. It was a nice little touch. I mean, it gave it a little bit of brand differentiation, but long story short, they got it out real quick, probably because it wasn't very cost effective, and probably, you know, there's only so many drinks you can make. And with the diversification of these tracks and having essentials and hip hop and country and yada yada, I think that would have been too cumbersome. Now you get a sticker. I get a sticker. Sometimes they do have some kind of neat add-ons. Like they just ran this promotion called Vinyl Me Parton, which was a Dolly Parton specific curation project that they had worked out an exclusive with the Dolly Parton estate, camp, labels, etc. And so each month was a different Dolly album. Some had been released on vinyl before. Some it was their first time on vinyl. Some had exclusive variant colors. And even with that, I know they are throwing in Dolly Parton slip mats and some other stuff. So when it comes to like a value add perspective, I think they do have a lot of great insight and great thought and great ROI for people who do kind of go down the path of curiosity and creativity with the Vinyl Me Please team. I know sometimes they have a lot of these articles on their website about the titles that, to be frank, I don't read too many of those. I can appreciate those journalists and writers. And I, at one time, I even, full transparency, had offered to contribute something. They had a project once about the greatest record stores in each state. It was actually a book, which, side note, I just picked up recently because they were clearing them out for $9 a piece. But I had offered to contribute something for one of my locals. Didn't go anywhere. Side story. But those kind of things, while some may think are inconsequential, I do think that helps build a brand identity. And in hindsight, I think is an interesting play creatively, I should say, to give them, you know, something that's considerably different in the subscription-based space. Now, Vinyl Me Please, probably the grand poobah of this business model, but there's a lot of other subscription services. And Bandbox, I don't know if I'd consider them a number two before they went out of business, but there are several other of these subscription services, and I'll kind of run through them kind of quickly. But they're all of a very similar type of persuasion. Like I said, Vinyl Me Please started, and they leaned in a lot on independent artists or rare titles or things that the probably the manufacturing cost and licensing component was relatively cheap, so they could keep costs lower and help build their business. And the first one that kind of comes to mind when I think of how Vinyl Me Please started is this record club called Magnolia Record Club. Because they offer, like Bandbox, like Vinyl Me Please, they offer color variants, but they also curate titles that are of that independent artist, that smaller label artist, things that are off the beaten path. I think I've bought in the past, I've bought Amos Lee off of their record club options. I've bought, I'm trying to think, JJ Gray Mofro again. I think I've got a title or two from them. So it's not everybody's kind of cup of tea. But a lot of singer-songwriter stuff, it's a different taste on that type of business model. Now, they're very similar to Vinyl Me Please in that they offer a one-month at $30, a 3 month at $29, and a 12 month, again, you sign up for a full year, the cost gets considerably lower. You're talking at $28 per title. I think it's a nice boutique kind of curated service. And like Vinyl Me Please, if you don't like what they're offering, they allow you to kind of have a lot of interchange, a lot of interplay to pick other things that are in their store and have options, have variety. And I think that's a smart move. So again, I hope that they continue down their path, because I do think options are always important, especially as a record collector, to have options and the power of choice. Now, another subscription service that I've never particularly partaken in, but I've seen it, and I think it's kind of interesting. I'll just use that word loosely. It's called Vinyl. And if you're thinking it's the word vinyl, you're kind of right. It's spelled V-N-Y-L. So they, I guess, intentionally left out the I in vinyl, and that's their brand, Vinyl. Similar kind of idea behind it that Vinyl Me Please, Magnolia, all these other guys employ. They have a 1 month, 3 month, or a 12 month option. At 1 month, you're talking $22. 3 months, talking $39. And at 12 months, you're talking, now I have to be very careful here, you're talking per title $26, but they want you to get 3 records a month. Once you get past that first month, say you do a 3 month membership, they're trying to get you to take 3 titles. 12, they're trying to take you 3. So, again, as somebody who's never been one of their members, I'm not exactly sure how that works. So, it wasn't very easy as I was doing a little research into this to get a lot of information on them. I do know that, like a couple services, as part of their curation queues, in terms of trying to pick records for you blindly, they do request an integration with, say, your Spotify account. So they weren't the only one. There's another one I'll talk about in a little bit called Black Box Record Club that did the same thing. And so I can appreciate that move only in the sense of if they have access to what you're listening to on Spotify, then that helps them pick titles, however they pick titles, curated more toward your taste. Now, the flip side of that is if you're already listening to that on Spotify, there's a great chance you may already have those records. So it opens it up for duplicity and records you don't need and that sort of thing. But, again, a lot of their focus is indie and small label, again, that they kind of are able to curate, and a lot of pink. Like if you go on the website, there's a lot of pink. So if you love pink, you love indie artists, and you want somebody to pick your records, Vinyl without an I, V-N-Y-L, that may be your jam. I'm not sure. But like I said before, there's another one that uses Spotify integration to help curate titles for you, and that's this Black Box Record Club. They're based out of Chicago, Illinois, and there's been a couple people in the vinyl community on YouTube who have actually done reviews. Dylan, who contributes to Vinyl Community Podcasts, the record spinner himself, he did a video on this service, and the Kirkham Report has also talked about this service. And like I said before, they do use Spotify integration to kind of get some curated cues to be able to select things that you'd be interested in. From a pricing perspective, they kind of aim, again, you're going to pick up a lot of the same kind of pricing nomenclature, but 1 month with them is about $30 a title, 3, 6, and 12. You're talking 29, so 3 months. Well, let me walk this back. They recommend 2 titles per month, so let's throw that out there. So at a 3 month subscription, getting 2 records for each of those months, so 6 records total, you're going to pay $29 a title. 6 months, so you're getting 12 records, you're paying $28. And then if you pony up and you get the full year paid in advance, you're going to get 24 records at $28 a piece, which isn't too bad. And even from the limited access I had on their website and kind of doing some market research on them, they advertise like they pick some kind of interesting stuff, some Jason Isbell. They had a Jimi Hendrix record on the kind of some of their promotional material. So my guess, and this is fully speculative, just based on looking in the windows of the building, the virtual building, if you will, that they probably use the Spotify information, they probably source themselves, and then they curate what they think you may like to listen to. So, interesting concept. Again, speculative. I haven't spoken with anybody at their business, but I think that it goes without saying that that's probably how they go about things. So, Black Box Record Club, interesting concept. And then a couple other smaller ones that came up in my research for this sode is one called Tipitina's Record Club. And this was a record club that was interesting to me because some of the titles in their curation were of the soul and R&B and blues. And there were some name artists. I saw an Etta James title. I saw like a Fats Domino title. So some name artists that kind of struck me as like, okay, that's different. So it had like some variety and some kind of brand differentiation there, which I thought was cool. But like I've been talking about on some of these other ones, they curate it. I don't know if you're able to swap out. I didn't go that deep down the honey hole here, but you know, $33 per title, and they do it every every 2 months. So it's something to kind of keep in mind there that it wouldn't be an every month kind of thing. I don't know the size of their business. I don't know a lot of super detailed information there, but I do think that of the ones I researched, that one kind of stuck out to me more because they had titles that weren't of that indie singer-songwriter, smaller label variety. The soul, R&B, and blues genre I thought was pretty cool. So I give them a tip of the proverbial Stetson on that one. And then the last one I'll talk about here, because there's several other subscription-based businesses out there of this smaller size, was one that I found called Secretly Society. And again, leaning back into those independent bands, artists, labels, smaller labels, same kind of concept here. A 3 month, a 6 month, or a 12 month subscription. Like a 3 month will run you at $75. So if you pull out your calculators, I think you can do that bebop, boobop, Mork and Mindy math, $25 a piece. 6 months, it was $130. So that came out to $22 a piece. And then if you pony up, if you want to be a super duper Secretly Society member, feel free to take that. If anybody from Secretly Society is listening, if you want to be a super duper, feel free to use that one. 12 months will run you $240, so that's $20 a piece. So a lot of options in the subscriber or subscription-based record collector community. But with the demise of Bandbox, that got me thinking of maybe there's some other folks out there or there's some other entities coming into the universe that may cause a threat to these business models. And one that really was top of mind for me was the Rhino High Fidelity series. If you're not familiar, Rhino owns several different labels underneath, most notably probably the Warner Brothers catalog. They have been reissuing what started as a project of reissues from their vast catalog options. It started as two classic albums quarterly. And it started, if I'm not mistaken, with the Cars self-titled 1978 release, mastered by Kevin Gray, and then I think there was a John Coltrane title that was the accompaniment piece, because originally it was going to be a rock and a jazz title, quarterly. Keep that in mind, quarterly. Got off to a lot of fanfare, good and bad, that the records were well-received. Well, that's tongue-in-cheek. The title, curation, and execution of how they sounded was well-received. The actual receiving of the products was not well-received because the mailers were absolute trash. There was virtually no customer service. I don't even know if that's improved, but I'm not here to dog on that for right now. But yeah, I mean, talk about not a lot of forethought in launching this, to have shitty mailers on your product and then to have no customer service, regular customer service attention to deal with it. So these are coming out now. It started out as two per quarterly. Now they're coming out, feels like two per month. And they're sticking to that classic rock jazz vibe, but they're kind of mixing it up. I know they're doing like two jazz titles coming up. They did two rock titles. This month they did the Cars, Candy O, and then they did the Grateful Dead record. So I know that, I think American Beauty, if I'm not mistaken. So they're kind of sticking in those themes, but they're kind of mixing and mashing. And the thing that's most encouraging about this is the price point. I mean, they're sticking right at that $40 per title. So remember I talked about Vinyl Me Please, got a lot of flack for pushing the price point up to $40 a unit, gosh, 3-4 years ago. Well, here we are. Rhino's pushing out their high fidelity series, and they're championing it as audiophile quality. Recordings, mastering, releasing. They've got the name guys behind these titles. They got Mr. Kevin Gray and assorted folks working on these things. So $40 now is kind of where it's at. And if you compare that to, say, the folks at Mobile Fidelity and what they're charging, it is a wallet relief if you are getting true audio file type of quality and execution at $40 per versus, I don't know, $125. If you're looking at the folks at Acoustic Sounds, you're talking $60 to $150, depending on the actual type of product you're choosing. And I'm not bagging on them. I'm an avid customer of those brands, particularly Acoustic Sounds. But $40 a piece, and they're AAA, so they're all analog. I mean, they're hitting all the marks. They've improved the shipping mailers, I've been told, but we're still not there yet. So they are at least hearing, without a dedicated customer service fork, somehow they are hearing our cries through YouTube, through the message boards. I don't know. Maybe there was a protest at the corporate offices I missed. I don't know. I wish I would have got wind of that one. I would have showed up with a big picket sign to let them know these mailers are trash. But Rhino High Fidelity is challenging, in my opinion, those kind of subscription-based models, because these are more popular titles, more in-demand titles, things that appeal to more of a mainstream customer base. And it's $40 a piece, so you're kind of, you know, you're right at that Vinyl Me Please price point. Another thing that's interesting about this project, this Rhino High Fidelity, is it's direct-to-consumer. So the local independent stores aren't getting a taste of this, which is interesting because it's kind of against their normal business model of, you know, making releases, sending them to the indies, selling them through the indies, the distributors, all that kind of stuff. So going direct to consumer, you know what that means? That means they're getting more of that margin, that selling margin, than they would before. So I think it's an interesting and ambitious business choice. I will say, as a consumer, one thing is kind of a turnoff outside of those hot trash mailers is, you know, you got to pay for the shipping costs. So if you're going to get these two albums now a month, you're talking about at least $10 to $12, depending on where you live in the States. I mean, I don't even know if they do international shipping, but you know, you got to pick up those prices. Whereas like the subscriber-based curation businesses, the shipping is quote-unquote free. It's built into their pricing structure, but you know, you don't pay for that from Vinyl Me Please or Magnolia or any of those guys. So something to consider there, but definitely a threat to the subscription model business is this Rhino High Fidelity series. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And then the last one I'll talk about as a quote-unquote threat is our friends at Record Store Day, the champions of the independent record store, as they've gone through their own kind of metamorphosis of a brand and developing a brand name that's synonymous with record collecting and vinyl collectors. They created this thing called the RSD Essentials series, which I'm going to call, and I don't mean to be short about it, and I'm just going to use this language, it's kind of some glorified reissues, which in some cases people have been asking for. Some of these titles are long out of print, or they're color variants to titles that, you know, you wouldn't normally associate with color variants, that sort of thing. I know they've done some Talking Heads things. I know they did like Misfits. They've done a lot of curious choices, but it's things people want, and they stock these in stores. They stock them in the independent record stores, and they're about $20 to $30. They're in that $20 to $30 price point window, which I think is advantageous. Now, do they sound better? Are they mastered by all the sorcerers of the mastering engineer? Sometimes. I mean, sometimes they will throw out these names of these sorcerers at the mastering wheel. But the bigger piece is that this is a viable threat to those subscription-based, curation-based vinyl collecting services. And I think it's interesting because, again, very similar to the Rhino High Fidelity series, I think that they have the power of leaning into the relationships and the licenses with the labels and the bands to actually produce product that appeals to a more mainstream audience and a more mainstream customer base, particularly people who are, for lack of a better word, playing catch up in the hobby or new to the hobby, who are maybe younger, maybe just getting into vinyl, getting back into vinyl. And I think that at $20 to $30 for a brand new record, as opposed to paying $40, I mean, every dollar counts when it comes to this hobby. And I can appreciate that. But I'm also a little tongue-in-cheek, a little cheeky about the leveraging of the record store name brand to now kind of bring this additional product to market. But that's another conversation for another time. But buddies, oh, that sounded terrible. Hopefully you're laughing like I'm laughing now. Now, buddies, that's easier transition there. See, I'm not a professional at this, guys. I'm just totally, you know, finding my way as a podcast person. But I appreciate you taking a few minutes to go down this journey. I think it's an interesting landscape of the subscription-based business, particularly in the vinyl space, the vinyl community, the record collecting space. Like I said, I've dipped my toes in several of those businesses. I've purchased a couple of these Rhino High Fidelity titles myself. I think the biggest takeaway, if you take anything else from this podcast, is that variety benefits the consumer. And it's ultimately the consumer's decision on how they want to spend their money. Personally, me, I love hunting. I love chasing down used titles, rare titles, hard to find titles. And some of these things, some of these businesses, Vinyl Me Please is a great example, help bring some of this rare, obscure vinyl back to the marketplace, back to the hands and turntables of collectors like me. And I sincerely do appreciate that. That has gone a long way into not only introducing me to new music, but also music that, let's face it, probably wouldn't be reissued had it not been for Vinyl Me Please knocking at the door, asking about certain titles, or Magnolia asking for color variants of certain artists' releases, or Rhino even, you know, going deep into the vault and pulling out titles that are getting the all analog treatment, which is music, literally music to our ears, coming from the tapes. So it's a great time to be a record collector in a lot of ways, and this journey through the subscription-based business and these threats to said subscription-based business, it's a win-win in a lot of ways for us record collectors, and I'm all for it. And signing off now, Concert Buddy, thanks for joining me as always. And when you get the chance, I'm literally spinning my finger in the air. When you get the chance, just spin it. I'll see you soon, guys.
And that was another trip around the turntable. Thanks for listening to Vinyl Community Podcasts.